Hello and welcome to Pumped, the Inside Podcast by Schwalbe. I'm your host, Tobias Wagon, and I'm talking here with Schwalbe athletes from different disciplines, from downhill to cross country, or from triathlon to road racing. And today, I'm talking to Scott Beaumont, who is a real legend in mountain biking. He used to be the BMX world champion back in the days, and then decided to go with the new thing with mountain biking, and decided to race 4x until then. In the past 20 years, he won pretty much everything you can win on the 4x bike. And I wanted to know how he still finds the motivation to train for his racing. Hey Scott, thanks a lot for taking the time to do the podcast with us. Where are you right now?
You guys are welcome. Yeah, it's great to be on here finally and chatting to you guys about everything we're doing. Right now we're based in Kidderminster, which is in central England. This is my home. This is where we base everything from. So that's what we're here now, training, getting ready for a season. My season starts this weekend. It comes around quick. It feels like just a few weeks ago we finished the season. We're starting a new one already. So exciting times.
Definitely. So, and you feel prepared for the new season?
Really good. Everything's been going perfect. It feels like it's the first season I've come into in the last sort of 5 or 6 years where I haven't been had some kind of injury carried into the season. So feeling really good, lifting really good weights. My times on the bike are fast. My power is high. Everything's perfect. Right now, I don't want to get too excited, but right now we're feeling really good heading into the season. It's as good as it could be. So now it obviously just depends on what everyone else did. But for me, I'm ready. So we're ready to go.
That's really good to hear, man. I mean, it feels like you are around forever and you have so many so many seasons under your belt. But what really interested me is how did you grow up and how did you start mountain biking or cycling?
Okay, so my story is probably a little bit different to most people. My dad was a professional motorcycle racer. Mm-hmm. He raced speedway bikes, like the flat track ovals. So he was like world number two in speedway and grass track racing and long track racing. So he was into motorcycles and that side of things. For example, when I was born, he wasn't here. He was racing in Germany. So I was obviously born into a racing family, you know. My uncle also was the clerk of the course for the Isle of Man TT motorcycle races. Mm-hmm. So he did that for like 50 years. So I was very much born into a racing family. Now, whereas my dad and my uncle were more into like motorcycle racing, in the early 80s, I was born in 1978. In the early 80s, BMX was huge. It was on the back of cereal boxes. It was on TV adverts. The film E.T. had made a big impact with BMX riding.
Yeah.
And so there was an advert in a local paper to go and try BMX. So we went along. We went to my local race. And it isn't the classic story of I won my first race and here we are today. But I finished second. I finished second in my first ever race.
Okay,
and,
that's pretty good.
It was okay, yeah. But if you're familiar with BMX, you know, you get those crappy kind of plastic trophies with a little rider on top. To me, that was everything. And on Monday morning, of course, I took it to school and was like, check this out, I won this trophy. And I was hooked. I was completely hooked on BMX. So from that point, I was begging my, as it was at that point, my mom to take me to BMX tracks all the time. My dad was still obviously racing all the time, so he had no weekends free, but my mom had her weekends free. So my mom was taking me everywhere. And we were going to BMX tracks 3 or 4 times a week, racing on the weekends. And I got just hooked on the whole sport, to the point that by the time I started racing at 4 years old, 1982, by 1983, I already moved on to my first factory team in BMX. It was a team called Birmingham Wheels, which was a really famous BMX team in the UK. Some of the best riders. And you can say from then I didn't really look back. You know, I started racing all the national series and all that kind of stuff, progressing through BMX. It was a really cool time. We were traveling first of all the UK and then obviously the world, going to European and world championship events. I did my first European championship when I was 7 years old. That was in Spain. I finished in fifth position, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
At seven, I'm European number five already. So it's, I guess that's the start of a career, you know, of international racing. We moved on through into, I had many, many good results. In 1991, we moved into, I finished third in the European Championships, which was the first time on the main podium at a European Championship race. But then in 1991, I also finished third in the World Championships on 20-inch on BMX. So that was the first time we sort of got on the podium and really had that taste of like, okay, we're close now to making it all the way, you know. Then the ultimate goal came in 95 when I won the World Championship in BMX. So yeah, it was a cool time.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so your riding from the beginning was racing. I mean, there it feels like there was not this I'm going to the bakery and back. It was right on the start gate, wasn't it?
It really was, yeah. So I, at my dad's work, we lived really close to his work, and he had this like a kind of area. So I was riding a bicycle from very young age. Like at 2 years old, we were scooting around on, you know, the first incarnations of balance bikes, I would call it. You know, it wasn't a balance bike like you see today, but it was just like we were whizzing around on two wheels, and just was hooked into two wheels because of my father, of course.
Yeah.
But the most accessible way at that kind of age was onto bicycles, of course. And that was it. Yeah. But it really wasn't about going to shops or riding around or some local little trail and having fun. It was, I liked racing. I was hooked on racing right from the very start. You know, at 4 years old, to win a trophy for something I just did, that connected with me instantly. Yeah. And, as you can tell, we haven't looked back too much.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So having your father as a motorcycle racer was definitely an advantage for you, I think, to getting involved into two wheels racing. But how was it to grow up as a kid from a very famous racer? Was it? Did you feel the pressure from your father to do well and to win races?
Like, honestly, not one bit. I reveled in it. If anything, I enjoyed it. So when I used to go to races with him, to his motorcycle races, they would do like parades at the start of the meeting of like the top riders, and he would always be included in the parade of stars at the race. And so he would take me and sit me on his motorbike in front of him, he'd take me out on the parade lap. Of course, in the 1980s, in a parade lap, no one's wearing a helmet or anything. So I'm like this five-year-old kid on a 500cc rocket ship motorbike, you know, and we've got no helmets on, and we're just waving at the crowds going around this stadium. So
different times,
very, very much different times. But absolutely, having like thousands of people clapping for my dad, and I'm there waving with him. I liked it. I was kind of like, this is really cool. This is like my dad's cool, but this is cool. I'm sat here, you know. It resonated with me already at that young age. Now I was into it, so yeah, it's good.
Yeah, great. So when you moved into BMX, how was the community or the BMX scene around your house?
Really, really good. In the 1980s, there were BMX tracks everywhere. So I could go to a different track every night of the week within 30 minutes of my house. So there were lots of tracks, lots of really good scene, thousands of people doing sport. And it was a really big, big sport, you know. Like I say, drinks bottles. It was on cereal packets. It was like everyone was wanting to sponsor BMX events and whatever. So you saw it on TV. You saw it on on you know, breakfast cereal. You know, you're pouring the cereal, and there is a BMX bike on the back. So yeah, it was really big, and it was easy to get into because it was so prevalent. It was everywhere at that time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good.
For people who start racing so early and then going through all the classes and then winning world champion, there's a chance to getting bored of cycling because you have won pretty much everything you can achieve. But how much is cycling a part of your life these days? Are you still fired up?
Yeah, I am more than ever, if I'm being honest. I guess you could really give me the label of, you know, I live for this. I live for, you know, I mean, I don't know much else. You know, for 40 years, I've raced at the highest levels of cycling. So it's very much like, this is my life. As you mentioned, I've been very fortunate. I've been able to win, you know, a lot of races, a lot of titles and stuff. And but for me, the drive now is as fierce now as it ever was. I'm coming to this season training harder, planning better, with some incredible sponsors supporting me. You know, the partners of my team are just are getting behind me more than ever. So it very much is, we're ready to go, and we're ready to go at a higher level and better than ever before. So yeah, there's certainly no burnout for me. I don't get bored. I find the challenge of winning races to be superior to anything else I've found in life. I think it's the dedication, the focus, the highs, the lows, everything that goes into winning a championship or a race event is unmatched in anything else I've found in life. So this is what I do. This is what I want to do. I plan to continue racing for a few more years yet. So those sort of 18 and 20 year old kids better watch out, because we're still firing at full gas, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, but it's also pretty rare, because I mean, there's a completely different story from I'm able to ride every day to I have to ride every day. I mean,
yeah,
and especially over all these years, it's pretty hard to still be motivated and still want to train. So, because I think, I mean, especially in your sport, training is not always fun.
No, it's not. And I completely agree. And I think what the difference with me is, I separate out my job to my social life and my family life very much so. So I really have been able, certainly in the last kind of 10 years or so, to really say, okay, this is my job. I don't necessarily go cycling now for fun or meet up with friends and have a good time. This is my job, and I really enjoy my job, you know. So I do it through the daytimes. I do my training, I do my riding, I do my skills work, always as a 9-to-5 kind of job. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of, at this stage in my career, this stage of what I'm doing, how I've been able to keep the energy and keep the focus is to treat it like that. If I was to mix in then, you know, going out, meeting friends, going out all day Sunday on bike rides, that wouldn't work for me. And that's what's been able to extend my career so far. The weekends for me are about races, or it's about being with my family and being, you know, spending time with my daughter and Holly, my partner. So that's very much, I think when people try to, you know, at my level, at the highest levels, try to just be all about cycling, then it's too much. Then you get burnt out for mm-hmm. sure. But I think if you just treat it very much as a job and feel like you have a special job, this is something really rare that you can do this as a job and make a living from this, then it becomes easier to not be burnt out, is my feeling.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's pretty understandable. But on the other hand, it's pretty hard to tell your wife or to friends, no, I have to go on the bike now because it is my job. So I always have the feeling it's pretty hard to tell that to people. So in the early days, you got pretty influenced from your father, and now you have a 6-year-old daughter. How do you influence her on a bike or in life?
Yeah, so Astrid, my daughter, is it's safe to say she's grown up very quickly. She's sort of six, going on 16, it feels like some days, but she's doing super well at school, super well in sports. Her favorite sports are kind of swimming and rock climbing. She really climbs really well. And she, of course, likes dance and gymnastics and these kind of sports. She does cycle. She has a bike. She is really, really good, really talented. Of course, she's watched Daddy kind of race since she was born.
Yeah.
Very similar to my story. But at the moment, there's no sign that she wants to race any form of bicycle. She just is doing super well, like I say, in swimming and gymnastics in particular. That's her things. So for us, it's, again, from my experience, it's just full support. So if she has dance competitions or something happening on some of our race weekends, then Holly takes her to those dance competitions. So already she's getting a feeling of winning and losing and the preparation and practice and all these kind of things. So most nights you come into our house and you'll find her doing cartwheels and backflips and stuff in the side of her kitchen just to keep practicing. I mean, last night she must have done, you know, 40 cartwheels and flips and somersaults and whatever. So, you know, she's always kind of, she gets that if she practices, she'll do well. So that's what we've kind of instilled in her. And she's doing really well. But yeah, at the moment, she can ride bikes really well. Certainly at the pump tracks, at the BMX track, she flies around those and looks really, really natural. She can be good at this sport, but at the moment it's not her choice to go down the cycling route. At the minute she's into other things, so we'll just see whatever she wants to do. We'll be right there.
And is it fine for you that she won't follow your footsteps in bike racing?
It's absolutely fine for me. You know, I think most parents would of course say the same. You know, she has to find her own way in life. The opportunity, yeah, I think, for cycling with her name will always be there if she wants to start doing something. You know, all of my sponsors send her things all the time. If she wants something for a bike, she has things for a bike. She's very lucky. Yeah. So yeah, her family name certainly opens some doors in cycling. But right now it's just, she can ride a bike really well. It's just, I'm not sure she's going to go and compete in the sport. So we'll see. You know, I've seen some parents, fellow riders who have kids who are like, you've got to race, and they're at races and they're at events like the Malverns, for example, racing with their kids. But that's when I feel they might get burnt out a little bit, because it's like, it's not their choice. It has to be their choice. I find when it's a child's choice, you know, you get the most out of it. So
definitely.
Yeah, at the minute we'll see, you know, she rides a bike often, like every couple of days we go out and ride bikes around and stuff. But I just think the competitive side isn't going to be there just at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, so what has racing given you, what you now forward to your child? Is there anything you have in mind?
Yeah, certainly. Just things like, you know, if you work hard, you'll get the reward, you know, those kind of things. So even like in a schoolwork, you know, it's like if you read on a night, if you do your homework, if you do these things, then you'll get, at the minute when she's six, you know, she gets a certificate. So she gets like a prize at the end of a week if she gets all her reading done and these kind of things at school. So we, you know, we're very much, you know, she sees the trophies in the house. She sees the kind of rewards and mementos that I've had. She understands that cycling pays me money. So if I win races, I get paid money. And she really understands that. And so she can see that kind of, you know, hard work brings a reward all the time. So that's the main thing we're handing down to her. And of course, like I say, she gets little snippets at the moment of, you know, she needs, for example, from Schwalbe, a new tire, then she can have a new tire, you know. So she understands that if she's good and she works hard, she can get rewards. So, yeah, that's the main thing, we've been showing her at the minute. But, also just happiness, you know, she sees how happy I am if I work hard and achieve a goal. She sees how happy we are. So she gets it. She understands. She's, like I say, very sort of very clever for her age. So she's soaking it all in at the moment and trying to be a good person, you know?
Yeah. And to understand that, to work hard and then you get rewarded, I think this is super important, especially in these days. So it's good. It's really good, and good to hear that you forward that. So I mean, you already said you're racing since 40 years, and in this 40 years, I mean, the sport changed, but also your body changed. So how did your training change during this period? I mean, how is your training today different than it was 10 years ago?
Well, I should probably mention as well that obviously I, just to go back to what I said earlier, so, you know, I won the world championship in BMX, and it was at a time when all the mountain bike companies were looking for BMX riders. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, in terms of being burnt out or whatever, I'm very lucky in that I've been able to do two completely separate sports. So I've come from BMX, and then at that time, Kona Mountain Bikes were looking for a top BMX rider, and I was their guy. I'd never ridden a mountain bike before in my life. But I'd at this point won two world championship titles. I'd won 10 national titles. I was happy and content with my BMX career. So at that point, we changed sports. I was offered a salary. I was offered all the expenses to go to the World Cups and everything else. And so we made a decision to change to mountain bikes. And I think that was really important to keep me in that late kind of teenage, early 20 years. You know, I completely started an entire new sport. I was like a kid again. Mm-hmm. Starting a sport. So that's why I haven't ever been burnt out by mountain bikes, because I had a whole lifetime on BMX before. Now, Even now, I still learn BMX. So onto mountain bikes, and we started, I've had a fantastic career in mountain bikes, again, like BMX, winning most things and being very successful. But the main thing that's happened with me, I've had some huge injuries over the years, some mm-hmm. really big life-changing injuries. But the main thing that has been good for me is I've been surrounded by great people. So we have, I have a clinic close to my house who've always supported my racing, and they've been able to repair me any major injuries. They have been able to keep on top of everything and make sure I can get back to at least very close to where I was before. So for me, the main thing was to have that connection with someone local who on a Monday morning, you're like, you know, dude, I've had a big crash at the weekend. We're in trouble. And to hear the words, don't worry, we'll sort it out. We'll fix you. It's no problem. Because always in the hospital, you know, I've been told 4 times before, you may never ride a bike ever again because the injury is so severe. And that is obviously your world comes in, you're just like, oh my God, this is really bad. Yeah. But then Monday morning to have your doctor say, no, don't worry, nothing is impossible. We can fix anything with some time. So that's been really useful to me, is to make sure you're surrounded by the right people. Of course, in my head, I still, there's always a goal to chase. There's always something that I want to win. And so I'm super focused and super motivated to make sure no injury is going to stop me anyway. But to have a close friend, a doctor who can say, yeah, that's cool, and medically we can also get you back to that point as well. That's been the important thing for me. So yeah, it's a massive thank you to, I have to mention his name, Stefan Vosen at Core Clinics. He's been instrumental in making sure that the major injuries I've had really haven't amounted to a career-ending injury just yet. So yeah, it's been good.
I think this is super important, huh? To have someone to trust, and especially with a sport like you did, where you crash all the time, and it's a pretty physical but also a head-to-head sport where you fighting with your buddies on the same track. I think it's super important to have someone to
Absolutely. And I think the main, because I've done this for so long and come from BMX into four cross, into the dual slalom and things that I do also, you know, company sport, I've had a long time of doing this. And I have been able to set up having the best equipment. I have the best bicycles. I have the best tires. I have the best clothing and helmets and all that stuff. That's really cool. But in over time, you create the best backroom staff as well. So the doctors and the trainers and the physios and all those people. And that's the key, is not just having the best stuff on the track, but it's off the track, having the best support as well. And it's something certainly I can recommend to all the riders, that, you know, don't just worry about having, you know, the best part on your bike. It's about having the best backup away from the track as well. And that's something that everyone needs to work on, instead of sat on their phones every day scrolling through Instagram, you know, they should be out there talking to local people and working out who, you know, when I have an injury, how can I make sure I'm okay, you know? So yeah. It's using your time wisely as a pro rider. It doesn't last forever. I'm the exception. I'm one of the few exceptions. I've been able to do this for a very long time, but most people as a pro rider can only do this for a few years. So it's making sure you use your time wisely and getting all the best help.
Yeah. When you're young, I mean, you're getting fit by just riding your bike. When you're a little bit older, you have to train other way, I think, huh? You can't... Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Thomas Slavik and he told me he's now training a complete different way than he's done it 10 years ago, but he's fitter than ever. So did you change your daily training routine during these years, and how is it today?
Yeah, it's really funny. And you mentioned Thomas Slavik. Obviously now my sport, which we haven't mentioned, but my sport is four cross racing, which is four riders on mountain bikes, kind of similar to BMX, but much bigger jumps, much higher speeds, kind of some more danger as well, I would say, mm-hmm. as well. So Thomas is mid-30s, and I'm obviously 44 years old now, and we are the world number one and two in four cross. Like, we are the best riders.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting in that our sport has me and Thomas as number one and two, and then number three is like 21 years old, and number four is like 22 years old. You know, we've been able to extend our careers by being very smart with our training, certainly. And I completely agree with Thomas, and we talk quite often. We're, as well as fierce sort of rivals on the track, off the track, we're really good friends, and we talk quite a lot. And my training, I would completely agree, is totally different to even 6 or 7 years ago, you know, certainly from like 20 years ago. What I'm doing now is completely different. It very much used to be, when I came from BMX into mountain bike, I was doing the World Cup of Downhill, the World Cup of Dual, which then changed into four cross. And we were just riding bikes all the time. And I'd lift some weights occasionally, and that would be kind of it. But we were just on bikes all the time. And it really was, I'm a pro bike rider and I ride bikes. And that was very simple. But now, the strength training, the yoga, the stretching, the plyometrics, the nutrition, the food we eat, the drinks we drink, everything, the sleep I have at night, you know, the quality time with my family that I find for my mental health is really vital. You know, if a happy home life for me is a happy racing life as well.
Yeah.
So just the whole package. When I was 20, I didn't care about much. I was just traveling the world, racing a bike, going to all the parties, not caring if I had a McDonald's, like just doing
drinking
it.
All and
I
was, the beers.
drinking all the beers, and we were just having a great time. And I wouldn't change that for anything. And we were successful at that point, and that worked right then. But now, if I was to do that now, I wouldn't arrive on the start gate on Sunday. I'd be hungover. I'd be tired. It'd be a waste of time me going. So it's certainly, everything I do now has certainly changed. You know, physically, mentally. Everything is like a package of just being, I have to be very smart in the way we train and very clever in what our plans are, because I can't live that rock and roll life anymore. Not that I ever lived it very, very much in my 20s, but certainly did more than I do now. And it's really interesting how things change.
Yeah. Okay. So as you said, I mean, you started with BMX, and BMX racing is a fundamental of four cross. So could you please explain a little bit the difference between these two sports?
Yeah, no problem. So initially, when I started mountain biking, like I said, I was doing the World Cup of Downhill and Dual Racing. Now, Dual Racing were two riders on one course and the winner moved forward into the next round. Now, that became mm-hmm. carnage, ultimately, because all you had to do was knock off the other rider and you would go through. So you would find the first turn was always a crash. And it was just,
yeah.
As a rider, it was horrendous. As a spectator, it was epic. Everyone was just loving this sport because it was guaranteed, action-packed, something was going to happen. then UCI talking to Eurosport about these problems and some of the riders and everything else, Forecross was then discovered and created, because it was thought that if four riders were on a track, then the top two riders would move forward into the next round, a knockout system where 64 riders start and it goes down to four riders at the end to determine the winner. So rounds of 64, 32, 16, 8, and then the final would make a five-round format, which would be fantastic for TV. Mm-hmm. And so Forecross started, and initially in the early years, in the early 2000s, the tracks were kind of a bit sketchy. They were just built at World Cup downhill venues where it would be very much like just a digger would make a few jumps in the week before the race, and the transitions and the corners, and nothing was very prepared. It was kind of, you know, they did a really good job. They had guys building the tracks. It was as good as they could do, but they only had a week to make the tracks. So those tracks are kind of sketchy, and yeah. And it was, you had all the downhill riders racing, and then as the sport progressed, it became more, Brian Lopes was the first rider to just solely concentrate on just Forecross. Mm-hmm. And then a few more did this until now. If you come to current day on the Forecross Pro Tour, which is the world series of Forecross, the riders generally just race Forecross. No one really races downhill or enduro or e-bikes or anything else. A few of us still race BMX, but most just race Forecross. And the sport has become very special. The tracks are now established. We have many tracks around the world that are just there solely as a Forecross track, and they are prepared, and every time we go to a racing, you know, this is like high level racing, and the track is perfect. So the difference between BMX and Forecross, first of all, there are four riders instead of eight. That's obviously in the title, Forecross. Mm-hmm. But I would say the preconception of people where they think BMX and Forecross are really similar stops at the start gate, where we have four riders start and eight riders start. We come out of the start gate, and then the similarities really stop there, because the idea that you can ride down a Forecross track now on like a hardtail bike is long gone. The tracks are much rougher, mm-hmm. much looser, and the jumps are way bigger. We have some jumps that are 60 feet long in a race format. So it's not like slope style where you would have big jumps like this. Yeah. We're racing four riders at a time over 60-foot double jumps. So we have wooded sections. We have all this stuff going on. So the bike of choice now is like a short travel kind of trail bike. It'd be more like a sort of 120 to 140 millimeter travel full suspension bike. And this is a necessity now, because the tracks are just much, much rougher and the speeds are much higher than they used to be in the early 2000s when the sport started, when hardtails were the bike of choice and the tracks weren't very prepared. Now you need a big bike for these big tracks that are racing. So we go to speeds up to kind of 40 miles per hour. We jump jumps up to 60 feet long. We have wall rides. We have wooded sections, rock sections. The sport really is mountain biking, and it's the only sport in mountain biking that can be televised using a very small amount of cameras. Mm-hmm. We can have four or five cameras come to an event and make a production that is just fantastic, lasts about an hour to an hour and a half on TV. And so the sport is very much designed to be TV friendly, and it's designed to take mountain biking to an audience that aren't familiar with mountain biking. It's designed to be exciting, to be spectacular, and to be influencing in the fact that it makes people want to have a go on the bike that they have in the shed.
Yeah.
And want to try this new sport. So we think we have a really unique concept in mountain biking. We think Forecross is the most exciting format. And yeah, we're excited for the future and what the whole sport, you know, how it will change more in the next 20 years.
Yeah. And talking about the audience who's not familiar to mountain biking, I think Forecross is pretty easy to understand, because in downhill, I mean, you don't understand why he is one tenth faster than the other guy. But in Forecross, you understand, okay, two go in the next round. And this is easy to see. I mean,
The huge problem that mountain biking has is that the whole industry has gone, it's not a problem, it's just where we're at now. The whole industry has gone, and the media and everyone have gone all in on downhill and enduro, Which is fantastic. And there's space for all of us. This is what we've always tried to say. There's space for all of us. But if you're sat at home and you do not care about mountain biking, you're changing the TV channel and you see a downhill race, the problem you have is the guy who comes down or the girl who comes down as the seventh fastest qualifying race. So seven riders from the end of the race. And she sets the fastest time. Well, by the time the last rider comes down, that last rider has a puncture and finishes 24th, the TV audience is like, well, who won? I'm not sure. I can't remember who that was. Because they do not care about who that number, you know, whereas in mountain bike, we care about, we know all the riders, we know who's who. But if we're wanting to grow the sport and we want people to see the sport from outside of our little tiny niche bubble, we have to have a sport that's very, very easy to understand. And as much as we understand downhill and enduro racing, anyone who doesn't care about cycling doesn't understand it. Whereas four cross, it's very easy. You have four riders on the gate and the top two riders across the finish line in front of you go through to the next round. Yeah. It's a knockout system until the final race. The final race, the person who wins that final race wins the race. So it's very easy to follow. That person just won. And here they are on the podium. That person won. Here they are with their helmet off, holding the trophy up. Perfect. Now I'm going to watch football or whatever next or whatever, you know. But it's very easy to promote and to show to people outside of our industry. And it's something that's always been lost within our industry because we all, I love downhill. I love downhill. It's fantastic. But you cannot take downhill to a non-mountain bike audience.
Yeah, it's definitely harder, way harder. Yeah.
It is because I know personally, I know how fast the guys travel. I know how skillful the guys are. But on TV, it looks slow. It's not motocross. It's not like snowboarding. We compare ourselves to downhill skiing, but we go at a third of the speed. Mm-hmm. It's just not, it doesn't translate to a non-mountain bike audience. Whereas we always feel that four cross does because it has big jumps. It's action-packed. There's some crashes. There's some really good overtaking moves, but it's all done in a way that you can understand and you can, you know, there's no explanation needed before the start of the race. We just start and the TV audience understands what's going on. So that's why we're all in on our sport. That's why I love four cross. I'll always love four cross. And, you know, we hope to have some really exciting times coming up.
Yeah, definitely. So as you said, I mean, the track's getting rougher and rougher and you need to be a more complete rider. I mean, you need to be able to ride your bike through some really technical terrain. That means you're also able to race other disciplines because you're such a complete rider. So are you interested into moving into urban races like Thomas do or downhill or... Are you interested in doing something else than four cross?
So right now, my plans for this year are very much I'm racing four cross. We have 9 rounds of British four cross series here in the UK, which is fantastic this year. Mm-hmm. We have 5 rounds of four cross pro tour, which again is great. And then, of course, we have other events like Crankworx, which has dual slalom and pump track and things happening. So I'm certainly interested in those. When it comes to urban racing, you know, I was at the very first Red Bull Lisbon downtown race. Mm-hmm. And so I've done Lisbon 4 or 5 times. I raced at the underground race in the Mineshaft in Germany, which was another Red Bull event. Yeah. So I've done these kind of funky, urban, crazy, different kind of events over the years. And I certainly would be happy to do some more urban races now. I think the skill set of a four cross rider, as Thomas is showing, certainly. But, you know, when we drop into these events, I think our skill set is so, like you say, rounded. We have the sprint, the power, but also the technical ability to jump big jumps, to be technical in woods and over rocks and stuff. I think the whole package is really good for urban racing. So it's certainly something towards the end of this season that I will look at doing a few of the urban races, doing a few of the sort of downmore races. And I've never ruled out doing a couple more downhill races here and there as well, just for fun, just where it suits at festivals like Dirt Masters, for example, at Winterberg or something like that. Certainly just go and do some downhill. But enduro is not on my radar at all. That's not my thing. I just believe when you spend, you know, everyone talks about you ride all day, which is great, but you only race for such a small part of it. I'd much rather race the downhill bit and not have to ride up all those hills all day. That's not the race for me. The race is when the beeps start. So I'd rather be racing downhill, just doing the race on the track that we've been timed on. So yeah, that's in the plans. I'm always open to any sort of invitations and whatever. We get quite a few all the time to come and race different races, different things. But my focus 100% will be four cross this year, and will also be the BMX World Championships, which I'm racing in this year as well. So we've got plenty going on. I think I'm racing 24 weekends this year. Wow. So a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, tied in with things like the Malverns Festival, the Malverns Classic, which is the UK's biggest mountain bike festival. So we have lots going on, lots of stuff going on. But certainly those winter months, like as you mentioned, Thomas, he's been able to mix in some urban races, which works really well as well. So yeah, in those winter months when it's a bit colder in Europe, to head over to South America and do some urban stuff looks pretty good fun. So yeah, 2024 season, might give it a little whirl, see what happens. Yeah.
That sounds pretty interesting, and looking forward to see you on the urban races. So last question of the podcast is, I mean, you doing this stuff for 40 years and you've seen a lot in your life. So is there still something on a list you really want to see?
That's a great question. Like you say, I've been very fortunate. I've been very lucky. I've traveled around the world. I've been to most countries. You know, cycling has taken me to some incredible places, and I will always be thankful for that. I will never, ever underappreciate how lucky I've been to travel the world and do what I do. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky to win a lot of races and a lot of titles, to obviously be world champion all the way down to winning my local race is something that is really important to me and I'll cherish forevermore. But in terms of something I'd like to see going forwards, I would say it's just simply the sport that I love so much, four cross, just to have its moments. I don't feel the sport has reached its full potential yet. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see four cross really, it's hard to say in like a 1 minute answer, but to reach its potential, to go to a much bigger audience, to be taken on board with a different company, for someone to take it to the huge masses. So I'd be looking at someone like a Red Bull or a Crankworx, someone to take four cross on and take it to a different level. I think the sport is now ready. I think the tracks and the athletes and the bikes are ready to take it to the masses in a way we haven't seen before. So I, aside from racing, I organize the Four Cross Pro Tour. It's my kind of baby. It's my thing. It's my passion project as well. So I have many conversations every year about the sport and how great it is and how everybody loves watching it, how everyone appreciates everything we do. But I think the opportunity still is out there for it to go to mainstream TV, to go to huge events and to have a big backer like Red Bull or something like this to take the sport to a new level. And that's what I haven't seen yet. And I'm here to witness that. I think the sport deserves it. I don't think there's anything like it on the planet. I think it's incredible. You'd never find anyone who comes to a four cross race, walk away and say, "Ah, that was okay." Yeah. Everyone walks away going, "That was awesome. That was incredible. We love it," you know. So, and we need to make it even bigger. So, yeah, that's what I hope the future brings. I hope something, like I say, I've seen a lot of races. I've seen a lot of special invite-only races. I've seen a local race. I've seen everything in between. But I think four cross can be the sport to take mountain biking to a new level. So, yeah, I hope one day it happens.
Okay, so that sounds pretty good, and I wish you all the best for this. And of course, I wish you all the best for the season. I mean, it's about to start and you feeling as fit as ever. So fingers crossed for your season. And I hope we hear us back after the season with some really good results.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, I'd just like to really quickly say thank you to all my sponsors, to my partners. I literally couldn't do this without you. Certainly Schwalbe as well, because I've had the best tires for like the last 15 years. I've been with Schwalbe a long time. Yeah. They've been a huge part of my career. And it certainly makes my job easier to line up on the start gate knowing I have the best tires touching the ground. We touch the ground in one place and it's the tire. And to have the best ones on, it's made my job much easier. So yeah, let's do this again at the end of the season. Let's see if we can make this a good one. And let's have a catch up at the end of the year and see how we did.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks a lot for your time. Thanks, and talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Toby. Cheers. Bye.